This is Mountain News and World Report, WMMT's weekly sojourn into life in Central Appalachia. We now invite you to join us for a visit with folks you may or may not know, items of interest to us all, and shining moments in our living history.
Hello, and welcome to Mountain News. I'm your host, Rachel Geringer, and in this episode, we're exploring local history and regional news. First, WMMT's Ohio Valley Resource reporter, Sydney Bowles, sets out to learn the history behind the RC Cola signs around Whitesburg. Then, from the WMMT archives, we revisit a story about the Hound Dog Hookers, rug makers from Blackie, who grew to national notoriety during the 1950s and 60s. And finally, from the Ohio Valley Resource, some recent regional news. It wasn't long ago that most small towns had their own bottling plants for making pop. Whitesburg was no exception. Until around the year 2000, Whitesburg had its own RC Cola bottling plant. But what was unusual was the RC Cola plant's marketing strategy. WMMT's Sydney Bowles brings us the story of all those big signs for RC Cola you see around Whitesburg. It's a story that some of our listeners will surely know well, and one that newer and younger residents probably won't.
Welcome back to an occasional series called What's Up with That Weird Thing, where somebody notices something weird, and I go figure it out. On today's edition, RC Cola. I moved to Whitesburg about 8 months ago, and one of the first things I noticed was people are really into RC Cola here. I had never heard of RC Cola, but here, all over the place, there are these signs for it. I figure if I have questions, you might too. So I enlisted Appleshop filmmaker and amateur Letcher County historian Herbie Smith to help me figure it out.
Okay, so the way that the old regular Baptists address each other is as brother and sister. So that's the official, in fact, I think it's in one of their kind of basic ideas is that no one's above the other person. Everybody's a brother or a sister.
That's, I tell you to say something and that's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Yeah.
Sure. That checks out.
So the guy who owned the RC Cola bottling plant, take it right here, I'll show you. Was known as Brother Ray. Ray Collins was his name, but everybody called him Brother Ray. He died in probably in the 1980s, might have been the 90s. But he operated the RC plant for most of those years. Then he sold it. I don't know exactly what year that was, but he decided to get out of the RC Cola business.
He saw the Cokes and the Pepsis of the world coming up in the rearview mirror.
Well, RC was probably the best-selling cola in Letcher County. And part of it was that Brother Ray was well-liked. People liked to do business with him. And it had all these RC signs all over the place.
Now, see, the real thing that I can't get over in this whole thing, all these signs around here say, in big letters, RC Cola, and then tiny, tiny letters underneath it, this church name or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was part of his advertising strategy. It was when people would open even a country store or whatever, they would have this big display of maybe letters 4 feet tall that said RC and then under that cola. And then there would be, and below that, there's just the name of the business would be hand painted onto the sign. But it would be maybe, less than 10% of the area of the sign was actually the name, and 90% was RC. I think the RC Cola at least locally, of course, we don't bottle it. Go straight.
Okay.
We don't bottle soft drinks anymore, but the original idea was that the syrup, the concoction that made an RC, an RC, or a Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, would come in concentrated form, and then they would add carbonated water locally.
So back in the day, there would have been, you know, a lot of little towns would have bottling plants, right?
Yeah, all over.
When did that change, do you know?
I think this RC plant up here stayed the longest of any of them, and I was told that part of it was that they used a slightly different sweetener than like you could get cans of RC Cola, but it would have a slightly different ingredient than for sweetening than you could get at the local bottling plant.
So that gave them kind of a competitive advantage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But when did it close, though?
I think it was open till maybe around 2000, something like that, and we go left here.
2000? Wow.
Yeah.
So does everybody know this story except for me?
I don't know. Did you ever see RC growing up?
No, I never did.
Which Mr. Bentley are you looking for?
R.C. Cola Bentley.
That'd be Bradley Bentley. Bradley's passed away.
Yeah, but his son was...
Let's see, his son, Ronnie.
Yeah.
I don't know where Ronnie lives at.
Oh, okay.
Now, there's another Bentley who's bought the building.
Oh, really?
Steve Bentley bought the building.
Oh, I don't know him, I don't think.
He used to run that pipeline company next door.
Bradley Bentley's the one who built this place, right?
Yeah.
And when it says 47 out there, does that mean that was the year it was built?
That I don't know.
Where was the bottling itself? Is it?
In the back.
In the back. Yep. Can I?
Well, it's in the process of becoming a vendor's mall.
Vendor's mall?
Yeah. In the process of it.
Oh, you're putting up walls and everything.
We're putting up walls and booths.
What's, do people already have signed up for these booths? Is it?
Some of them, yeah.
Wow. Do you know when it's going to open?
They're saying Saturday morning.
This coming Saturday.
It's a lot to do by Saturday.
What is today? This is Thursday.
Today is Thursday.
I ain't going to make it, boys.
Did you ever see the sign that used to sit down here by the entrance of the hospital? It said population plus, at that time, one grouch. And then it went to two grouches. I know there's one around by the Coca-Cola plant.
Uh-huh.
The sign's still standing. I don't remember exactly what it says. Something about stay in school, I think.
Yeah, stay in school.
Now, the one that never got put up was, R.C. Cola, Whitesburg, Kentucky. Attend the church of your choice. It's still in the back.
Where? In the back here? Can we go see it?
Well, it's stacked up against the wall and that's a junk. This is a very dirty place. Now I'm watching for snakes.
Wow. They're
built up on, it's painted metal.
Welcome.
2x2 frame. Welcome to Whites. Right here's the attend, big RC in the middle. There's church.
Yeah. And that was hand painted too. Look at that.
Of your royal crown and big RC choice.
Do you drink RC?
It costs more than the rest of it.
What's your name? I'm sorry.
Ted Collins.
Ted Collins. It's really nice to meet you. I'm Sydney.
Sydney. That's the second Sydney I've seen today.
This town is not big enough for two Sydneys. We're going to have to fight it at some point.
No.
I'll see ya. City. I really do wonder if this is genuinely something that me and nobody else is interested in. But I guess we'll put it on the radio and find out. Okay.
So this is Arthur. Okay, so we got...
Does it say where it's bottled?
12 cans. Produced under authority of Dr. Pepper 7-Up Incorporated.
Ooh, RC sold out.
Evidently, it's a part of Dr. Pepper now. Produced under the authority of Dr. Pepper 7-Up Incorporated, Texas. So
I think we should get a 2-liter bottle and take it back to the office and make everybody drink some. Tastes like soda.
After we got back from our trip, Herbie found out that Dr. Pepper, which bought RC Cola, got acquired by Keurig Green Mountain last July. The acquisition cost $18.7 billion. This is WMMT, and I'm Sydney Bowles.
If you have a question about your town that you want answered on the radio, call 606-633-0108 and ask for the Public Affairs team. Next up, we're continuing to look back at Letcher County history through a 2016 interview with Mary Gail Adams. She's the daughter of Josephine Whitaker, who was one of the Hound Dog Hookers, a group of women from Blackie, Kentucky, who made hand-stitched rugs featuring hound dogs and other animals in the 1950s and 60s. The Hound Dog Hookers became nationally known, so much so that Lady Bird Johnson commissioned two rugs that were in the White House when Lyndon B. Johnson was president. WMMT's Mimi Pickering produced this story in 2016.
There's the label. It says Hound Dog Hookers, Blackie, Kentucky, homemade in Letcher County by, and then whoever would make the rug would put their name on it. And this one says Joe Whitaker, member of Kentucky Guild of Artists and Craftsmen. When they first started making the labels, she'd tear up sheets and make the labels out of some old white sheets. And the two that I got back are in mint condition. There's nothing wrong with either one of them, so they've been well taken care of. I'd always wanted a hound dog, and me and my sister had tried to find other ones with no luck. About 6 years ago, Grace at the library had called me and said, there's this woman who is trying to get in touch with someone about the Hound Dog Hookers, and she's going to be contacting you about a rug. I said, okay. This lady emails me and says, I'm from somewhere in Ohio, and I had been to a vendor's mall in Indiana, and I found this rug, and it has a label on it that said Hound Dog Hookers, Blackie, Kentucky. So she begins to inform me that she has a hound dog rug. I ask her, is there a label on the back that has someone's name on it? And she says, yes. I said, whose name is on the label? And she said, Josephine Whitaker. And my heart just drops out of my chest. And I said, is it in good shape? And she said, it's in perfect shape. And she does not know that I would probably pay her any amount for this rug. And I had it within a week. And when I opened the box it was in, I just melted into the floor. And I just couldn't believe it. And it's in perfect shape. And this rug is probably 35, 40 years old. So I was thrilled. My sister's so jealous. She said, now we got to keep looking and see if we can find another one. And so I have two of them back that are in mint condition that have been gone from this house, this very house, for probably 40 years. So hopefully they're coming back home where they need to be. And I know there's more of them out there because they sold so many. I would buy back as many of them as I could with my mom's name on them. My name is Mary Gail Adams. We're in Blackie, Kentucky, and I have lived in this house almost since I was 5 years old. So I grew up here. My mother, Josephine Whitaker, was the most self-sufficient, hardest working woman I ever knew. And I know people say that about their families, but she was. She could do 40 things at once and keep them going. She knew more stuff than anybody I ever knew about everything. From as far back as I can remember, my dad was a coal miner who got out of work in the early 60s. And then we bought this house and moved here from Leatherwood in about 62, I think. And she had already gotten involved with the Hound Dog Hookers through Marianne Adams, because Marianne Adams is actually, I think, the one who actually got it started, Dr. Lundy Adams' wife. I'm assuming she just thought it was a way to supplement their income. So I think that's the reason we moved here closer. A gentleman by the name of George Wells, he was from New York City. He came here to kind of try to help to fight that war on poverty that was started. And he was a rug maker and an artist and all this stuff. So he thought of a way to help women make money by teaching them how to make rugs. So he came here and started teaching classes on how to hook rugs and how to do shading and colors and that kind of thing. And then he had a contest. He knew he wanted to call it Hound Dog Hookers. He said, "I want to have a contest to draw a hound dog. And whoever draws the best hound dog, that's the one we're going to use, and we're going to make a rug, a hound dog." Mom could draw, and so Mom got on to that. And so my sister tells me that she didn't have big enough paper. So she went to this grocery store that's close to where we lived, and she got them to give her the brown paper that they wrap meat in, a big piece of that, which is long and narrow. Paper being narrow, she had to keep shortening his legs. So she finally got it erased and got it drawn to where she liked it. And so she submitted that, and that's the one that won. That's how the hound dog started. I can show you the original hound dog pattern if you want me to.
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay. That's what started the hound dog. See his little short legs?
That was the big piece of paper she needed?
Yeah. She did most of them on this kind of paper. After a few years, she would order the paper herself. Growing up in this house, there was always a frame set up with a rug in it. There was boxes of wool and thread that they used. There was usually a huge pot on the stove boiling of dye to dye the wool in. And of course, everything here was covered with wool dust. So the house was always full. Irene Dixon and Alcine Fields became the other two ladies of the Hound Dog Hookers. And then over the years, when they would get lots of orders, I've made them, my dad's made them, two of my aunts made them. Lots of women worked on them. If it was a small rug, and each one of them would take it home and they'd do them at home. But if it was a big rug, they would set up here. When they first started, they didn't use wool. I used to play with it. They had this little machine, and they would take like old women's skirts or things that was kind of wool-like material, and you would hold it there, and you would run it through that, and it would cut it into strips. So then I guess George Wells got them connected to a place that would ship them wool. And so it would come here on UPS trucks in big, huge boxes, and it was all beige. Big boxes of wool. Mom would take whatever rug she was going to do, pick the colors, and then she would dye. And she had mason jars in a cabinet in the kitchen with the dye in it, and she had each labeled what color it was and how many drops of this and this and this it took to make it that exact same color every time. I don't know how she managed to do that, but she did. And then she'd hang it on the clothesline. We had wool hanging all over the clotheslines to dry. And then when it would get dry, she'd bring it in. And so me and Daddy would have to sit with it on our hands while she was balling it up, rolling it up, and then that gets up your nose. And so I hated it. You know, I was a little girl, and I just hated it. As a little girl, I did not realize, with my dad not working, that that's what we lived on. That's what supported us. I didn't realize that. How the rugs went is there was this stuff called monk's cloth. They would order that. That would come on these huge, big, long bolts. and she would cut those to size. And they were put in these wooden frames that had tacks all the way around them. And you pulled that real tight on those tacks. You kept pulling until you got it tight as possible. And then she would take her pattern, which would be on a piece of brown paper, like paper bag. And she would draw that out with a pen first and then a big marker. And then she would take this white tulle and she would trace that on that. And then there was this blue powdery ink stuff that over top of all that she would take and transfer that to that monk's cloth. And then she'd take her marker and she'd add what she wanted and she'd fill in leaves or some kind of shading. And then she would have on each one of those what color it was to be. And then she'd get her thread dyed all the color she needed it dyed. And then she'd sit down in a chair just like a lady would when they would quilt. She had horses, wooden horses that the frame sat on. And then she'd go to work. Hooking. And then in the meantime, she was canning and cooking and gardening and housekeeping and raising me and taking care of Daddy and everything else that had to be done. For instance, that hound dog would have probably taken her 3 days to finish hooking it. You hooked it on the back. You didn't hook it on the front. So you hook it and you get it all hooked and you take it out of that frame. And then you have to clip all the loose threads off of the top side. And then she would hem that monk's cloth. And then she had this stuff in a can. It was liquid latex, what it was. And she'd lay that rug out on the table and take her a butter knife and pour that liquid latex on it and put it all over that rug and let it dry and then put their label on it and it's ready to go. And then George Wells got them connected with organizations. They became part of the Craft Guild at the time. There was a store in Louisville, I remember the lady that was involved a lot, sold a lot of them for them. It was called the Sign of the Pine Tree. George Wells also helped them start to go places to teach other women how to make them. So I can remember going with Mom lots of places, and we wouldn't get home until late at night. And for a little girl that never went anywhere, that was a real treat for me. They were in lots of travel brochures and things like that somehow. And then people would just show up here from Wisconsin or Vermont or, and they go, you know, we were traveling and we found this hound dog hookers at Blackett, Kentucky, and we were very interested and we wanted to see your work. And the mom would show them all this, and sometimes they'd commission one. Some person, I have no idea who, commissioned a snake, just a laid out long snake. Why you'd want that, I don't know. Some person commissioned one of their poodle, one of some turtles in a circle. Just weird ones, you know, that they only made one time. But now, most of like these were made repeatedly over and over and over and over. And then Lady Bird Johnson, I'm not sure how she found out. She commissioned, I think, 3. When Lyndon Johnson was still president, there was one she commissioned that was 2 that was in the White House. Of course, one was of his beagles. And another one was of like an eagle with the leaf things on it for the White House. And then there's one they commissioned with wildlife on it. It was huge. That I'm told is in his museum in Texas. And they did not make a lot of money. So no, they didn't sell for much. This one behind me might have sold for $78, $75. The hound dog was probably $60-some. I want to say the big one for Lyndon Johnson, I want to say it was $1,500. And there was no vacation and there was no time off, so it was all the time. And there was no slumps. I mean, there was no months that went by that they didn't make them, because they were always, someone was always commissioning them. But they were sold all over this country. Mom did it from about 1962, I'm going to guess, until about 77 or 78. And then her and the other two ladies, I think, were just tired. They just stopped. I would have a lot more of her stuff if she hadn't gotten rid of it. Oh, a prison, and I don't know how this came about either, but a prison here in Kentucky had contacted her, and this person was in charge of the recreational part of the prison, and he had heard about these people that made rugs, and they decided they wanted their prisoners to learn how to make rugs, and he wanted to know how to get started. Yeah, she was so done with this. She sold him just about everything she had. And what she didn't sell him, she burnt. They had to be perfect. And she put hours and hours of work into the design, getting the shading just right. She would go in and maybe change a leaf or change the way an eye looked on a fox. Each color, everything had to be exact. I think she enjoyed it.
Last in this episode of Mountain News, we bring you recent regional news from the Ohio Valley Resource. First, Aaron Payne reports on a new study from the Washington Post that found synthetic fentanyl is causing a rise in opioid overdose deaths in the Ohio Valley.
A Washington Post investigation finds synthetic opioids are causing more overdose deaths in the Ohio Valley, even as death rates from other substances are falling. The Post looked into data from the Centers for Disease Control and found the region has the nation's highest rates of death due to fentanyl. Aaron Payne reports.
Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia together had 8 of the 10 counties with the highest annual rate of synthetic opioid deaths between 2013 and 2018, according to the Washington Post analysis of CDC data. Campbell County, West Virginia had by far the highest rate with nearly 63 deaths per 100,000 people. Washington Post reporters visited many of these counties to learn how locals are handling the epidemic. President Trump has touted his administration's efforts to provide resources and end the crisis. Reporter Sari Horwitz says the administration has taken steps the Obama administration failed to take. But the situation isn't as bright in these communities as the White House says.
When we went to these local communities and we spent quite a bit of time in Ohio, what we're hearing on the ground is they're still not getting enough federal funds and they're not getting the funds fast enough.
Horwitz says local officials are asking for more funds for treatment, law enforcement, child services, and health care, among other needs. The Washington Post article is titled Fighting Fentanyl and is part of a series focusing on the toll the synthetic opioids have taken on the country. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Aaron Payne.
OVR's Mary Meehan reports on a Louisville treatment facility that was recently certified by the American Society of Addiction Medicine.
A Louisville treatment center is among the first programs in the nation to be certified by the American Society of Addiction Medicine. Mary Meehan reports it is a shift in how addiction treatment is evaluated.
The Volunteers of America Mid-States Freedom House was one of the 7 programs in the country to be recently certified under Phase 1 of a pilot program. The Society's president, Dr. Paul H. Early, says an evaluator visits a facility to ensure treatment is comprehensive and effective. He says it is a first step in standardizing treatment for substance abuse.
The advantage to the public is they can choose a center which gives quality care, and they know they're going to get the type and intensity of care that ASAM has independently, by research, said is appropriate.
About 30 hospitals will be evaluated in Phase 2. Early says eventually people will be able to search for certified programs on the Society's website. Ultimately, he says certification will lead insurance companies to offer higher reimbursements to programs providing the most effective care. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Mary Meehan.
That's it for this episode of Mountain News. Music on this episode is Jenny Hawker and Kay Justice with Dark and Stormy from their album Come All You Tenderhearted. That album was produced by Appleshop's own June Apple Recordings. If you'd like to hear this or previous episodes again, you can find them on our website at www.wmmt.org or download Mountain News as a podcast from SoundCloud or Stitcher. I've been your host, Rachel Geringer, and from all of us at WMMT, thanks for listening to Real People Radio.
This has been Mountain News and World Report, a production of WMMT-FM, Mountain Community Public Radio, the non-commercial broadcast service of the world-famous Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky.